ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्णा। टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 6। Chapter 6 is entitled The Activities of Rishabhdev, and today we are on verse 14.
Aho nu vamsho yashasa vadatah.
Aho
nu vamsho yashasa vadatah. यत्र पुमान् पुराणः प्रियाव्रतो यत्र पुमान् पुराणः कृतावतारः पुरुष साध्य कृतावतारः पुरुष साध्य चार धर्मं यद कर्म हेतुं चचार धर्मं यद कर्म हेतुं अहो नु वंश यशसा वदातः प्रियाव्रतो यत्र पुमान् पुराणः कृतावतार पुरुष साध्य चचार धर्मं यद कर्म हेतुं अहो नु वंशो यशसा वदातः प्रियाव्रतो यत्र पुमान् पुराणः कृतावतार पुरुष साध्य चचार धर्मं यद कर्म हेतुं।
वर्ड टू वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। अहो ओ नु इंडी वंशः द डायनेस्टी यशसा With widespread fame, avadataha, fully pure, priyavrataha, related to King Priyavrata, yatra, wherein, kuman, the supreme person, puranaha, the original, krita avataraha, descended as an incarnation. Purushaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Saha, He, Adya, the original person. Chachara, executive. Dharma, religious principles. Yat, from which. Akarma Hetum, the cause of the end of fruitive activities. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Oh, what shall I say of the dynasty of Priyavrata, which is pure and very much celebrated? In that dynasty, the Supreme Person, the original personality of Godhead, descended as an incarnation and executed religious principles that could free me from the results of fruitive activity. Purport. There are many dynasties in human society wherein the Supreme Lord descends as an incarnation. Lord Krishna appeared in the Yadu dynasty. Similarly, Lord Rishabhdev appeared in the dynasty of King Priyavrata. All these dynasties are very famous, and of them, the dynasty of Priyavrata is most famous.
ओम ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्ण। So today we are continuing the discussion of the activities of King Rishabhdev. In the previous chapter we saw the instructions of King Rishabhdev to his 100 sons headed by Bharat Maharaj, and there were some very beautiful verses we saw in chapter 5. Those instructions are still famous, people are still, like they are relevant even for today's age, and many instructions about how to become detached, attachment to the lotus feet of the Lord, how to progress on the path of devotional service. So some beautiful verses are there in the previous chapter in the instructions of King Rishabhdev. So after describing his instructions, Sukadeva Goswami has now moved to describing the activities. Because sometimes people want a proof that whatever someone is speaking, are they themselves practicing it? And that is why we see Srila Prabhupada, like, you know, amongst all the preachers who were there, so some were so-called preachers who used to preach the tenets of Krishna consciousness, but they themselves were not practicing those tenets. Very strict with their followers, but they were themselves bogus, they got exposed, you know, either money laundering, sex scandals. So we see many of them were giving instructions, but they were not following those instructions themselves. They were not walking their talk. But we see in case of Srila Prabhupada, why this Krishna consciousness movement, you know, it was an explosion during the 1960s, late 60s and 70s, was because Srila Prabhupada was walking his talk all the time. In fact, when Srila Prabhupada was asked, he was sitting with some reporters, and he was asked, he said that, how do we know that, you know, how does one identify a self-realized person, and how do we know that you are one? And Srila Prabhupada said that if you keep me in a room full of naked women, I will still not get agitated at all. You can put me in a room and see. And that is the definition of a self-realized person, whose senses don't get agitated when, you know, they come in contact with sense objects. That person has sense control. So you see, Srila Prabhupada was always walking his talk. He was not preaching something and he himself had a different life to lead. And that is why so many people were inspired. Because when someone sees that the words that are being spoken or coming out or emanating from the mouth of a person, if they see their life as a living example of those words, it actually creates inspiration in the heart of people to then follow in the footsteps of such a person. So over here also we see Sukadeva Goswami. After he has described the instructions, he is now describing the activities of King Rishabhdev. And that, you know, that proves that King Rishabhdev, whatever instructions he gave, he is following them, in fact, to a very high standard. You know, he gave instructions obviously for people like us also who are conditioned in Kali Yuga, who will also be reading these instructions and how do we follow. But Rishabhdev took them to a very high level and he was following them to the highest level possible. So in this chapter, the activities of Rishabhdev are being described, and also it is described how to leave this world. Because in this chapter, Rishabhdev's, you know, passing away or leaving from this world is also described. Not only his activities, how he travels to different places, but also his activity of leaving this world is described. So in this chapter, we see that there is one more very important thing which Prabhupada establishes and which happens in the verses of this chapter, is that Rishabhdev is firmly established by Srila Prabhupada, and also obviously from the words of the mouth of Sukadeva Goswami, we can decipher that Rishabhdev Rishabdev was the founder of the Jain religion. So we see there is Jainism has spread so much, especially in India. We see it's a very famous sect which so many people follow in India. But the origin of that sect is Rishabdev. And Rishabdev is none other than an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that has already been established earlier on in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. However, we see that some of the, like most of the Jains, they do not accept Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That gap is there. Although, you know, Rishabdev is there in their particular religion, but they don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it is described over here that further, once Rishabdev has been established as the origin of the Jainism religion, it is also described in these verses that there was a king whose province through which Rishabdev travelled, and that king's name was King Arhant. And he then, you know, he was inspired by Rishabdev, but instead of following in his footsteps, he actually became an imitator. So he imitated some of the activities of Rishabdev and he established a concocted religion, which is again Prabhupada is alluding to Jainism, how he then took it forward. So that is what is described in the previous few verses of this particular chapter. And the chapter actually starts with very nice instructions about the mind. So, you know, there is a discussion between Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, and there are very illuminating verses about the mind that are given over there. So it says that, over there it says that don't trust the mind. Because the mind is like an unchaste woman who can actually be easily carried away by the paramours. So unless the mind is fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, the mind can actually be very, it can be the enemy, which we've also read in the Bhagavad Gita many times. But Sukadeva Goswami is reiterating that position of the mind over here. And he's saying that the paramours which can entrap this unchaste woman are, you know, the unwanted things like lust, anger, greed, envy, pride. They can all take over the mind and they can start ruling the mind. So those are some instructions about the mind which are there in the previous few verses. And then how Rishabdev gave up his body, that is described in the previous verses. How there was a forest fire in which his body burned to ashes. That whole description is there. And then the description of how King Arhant established the concocted religion. And how the misled people of Kali Yuga actually take up this religion. And they take it up very fervently. We see Jainism has spread very, very widely in India. So, and the last two verses, the previous verse yesterday we heard from a very nice class from Adi Purush Prabhu, and today's verse, these two verses are glorifying Rishabdev's position in this particular section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he, you know, it gives the purpose of why he incarnated. And he incarnated to actually deliver the same thing which we hear in the Bhagavad Gita. He incarnated to deliver people from the clutches of illusion. Especially he knew that, you know, this particular thing, obviously the Lord is omniscient. So he knew there is this dubious or spurious king who will come, King Arhant, who will come and concoct in terms of imitation of his own path. He will concoct a religion and, you know, many people in Kali Yuga will be misled by this so-called Mayavadi interpretation of his own path. And many people will be misled. So if, when people read the activities and the instructions of Rishabdev, they will find illumination or they will find the correct path to Godhead through his instructions. So the purpose of Rishabdev's instruction, incarnation is glorified in the previous verse. And in today's verse, they are glorifying the dynasty of King Priyavrata. So not only the dynasty of King Priyavrata is glorious, but they are also glorifying the position of Bharatvarsha. So Bharatvarsh is very famous and is very glorious because there are so many incarnations of the Lord who have taken birth in Bharatvarsha. So the dynasties are glorious and all these dynasties have chosen to appear in Bharatvarsha, and therefore the position of Bharatvarsh is also very glorious. And that is what is described in the previous verse. So in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is... there is a beautiful verse in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where Krishna's birth or Krishna's appearance in the Yadu dynasty is glorified. So over there, there is a very nice verse which describes that because King Yadu was very dear devotee of Lord Krishna, Krishna actually wanted to please that dear devotee of his. and therefore he chose to appear in the Yadu dynasty, just as sandalwood trees or chandan trees choose to appear in the Malaya forest. So it is said Malaya Hill is famous, but it becomes more glorious because the sandalwood tree appears over there. There is, you know, Malaya forest is full of sandalwood trees. So just as the presence of sandalwood trees make the Malaya forest even more glorious, in the same way the appearance of Lord Krishna in the Yadu dynasty has made that dynasty very glorious. So it is the dynasty is glorious because the Lord is appearing in that dynasty, and that is what we are seeing in today's verse, which Sukadeva Goswami is stressing, that why Priyavrata's dynasty is so glorious, it's because the Lord chose to appear in that particular dynasty. However, we can see that the Lord can appear from anywhere and everywhere. The Lord need not appear in a particular dynasty. Like, he chooses to do that, he is Abhidya and Swaraj. So he chooses to do that to please some of his devotees, but he is not bound that he has to appear in a certain way. And that is proved from the example of Varahadev, for example. Now, what dynasty? He appeared from a nostril. So, you know, it's a very unusual bird. He appeared from the nostril of Lord Brahma. So there was no dynasty, no father, mother, nothing to make. The nostril of Lord Brahma is glorious over there. Because Varahadeva chose to appear from there. In the same way, Narasimhadev, you know, what dynasty? Nothing. He appeared out of a pillar. You know, just because Prahlad Maharaj from his word, from his mouth proclaimed to his father that, yes, my father, my supreme lord, my lord is present in this pillar as well. So the Lord chose to appear from that particular pillar where Prahlad Maharaj was pointing. So we see that the Lord is not bound by all these rules and regulations. He can appear anywhere he wants and from wherever he wants and any time that he wants. He need not appear from the womb of a mother. He can appear from, like we described, the nostril, or even from a non-living thing like a pillar. He can appear. So what is more important is not only the dynasty which is glorious, and here it is said, Prabhupada is saying a line in the purport that of all these dynasties, the dynasty of King Priyavrata is the most famous. And it is the most famous because Rishabhdev appeared there, and now we will see that even Bharat Maharaj's activities will start. Like, this chapter is coming to an end, it's a very small chapter, there's only 19 verses in this chapter. And then we will see the activities of Bharat Maharaj. So the three lives of Bharat Maharaj are described in the next few chapters of this particular canto. And after that we will see the whole Shishumara planetary system, the whole description of the Vedic cosmology, how the planetary systems are positioned. Based on this canto, the entire Vedic planetarium in Mayapur is being built, in the temple of Vedic planetarium is being built. So we will see that the activities of Bharat Maharaj will be described. And the life, three lives of Bharat Maharaj will be described, which are so instructive and glorious to read about. So not only Rishabhdev appeared, but even Bharat Maharaj, after whom this entire Bharat Varsha is named, has also appeared in Priyavrata's dynasty. And therefore it is much more famous. That is what Srila Prabhupada is writing in the purport. Because such glorious people have appeared who have come to lead us from the path of darkness to the path of light. So not only is the dynasty famous, but it is also important to understand why the Lord appears. So here it is described that the Lord has appeared to take people out of Maya and take them out of the clutches of mode of passion and ignorance. That was the purpose of the descent of Lord Rishabhdev. Through his instructions, he also instructed his sons, who will now, Bharat Maharaj will also lead an illuminating life, and he will teach through his example. Sometimes the Lord's pure devotees are ready to become an example to show what also should not be done. So we will see in the life of Bharat Maharaj, he will become an example of how one should not have attachment. Like, you know, whatever you remember at the time of death, you will become that, and that is the example which we will see to Bharat Maharaj's life. How not to get attached, he became a deer, but because he was a devotee, he remembered, and then he became Jad Bharat in his next life, and then, you know, the instructions are there, the conversation between him and Rahuguna are there. So the Lord appears to establish the tenets of religion, to give the, you know, take the suffering conditioned souls back to his lotus seat. And also he appears sometimes himself, like we see Rishabhdev has appeared. Many times he sends his representatives. Like we see, he sent his empowered representative Srila Prabhupada, who actually, you know, created this revolution of Hare Krishna movement. And sometimes he appears in his sound vibration as well. So we see, like in the first canto, again it is described that Krishna Swathamo Pagate, when he left behind his literary incarnation, which is the Srimad Bhagavatam, or, you know, Vedic scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, and also he also appears to his sound vibration to dissipate the darkness which people in the material world are in. So today it's actually the appearance day of one of the very empowered representatives. He keeps sending his representatives to save this world, and it is the appearance day of one of the most empowered representatives of the Lord, which was Jesus Christ. I heard some devotees were saying when they left the temple that, oh, it's the Vyas Puja of Jesus Christ, which is actually very true. Like, Jesus Christ was an empowered representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And today is his appearance day. And Srila Prabhupada had utmost respect for Jesus Christ. If we see, there are many conversations of Srila Prabhupada that are recorded on what he thought and what his views were on the position of Jesus Christ. So there is one recorded conversation of Srila Prabhupada here in Melbourne only. There was a group of church people, like the clergy, who had come to meet Srila Prabhupada. And they were having a conversation with Srila Prabhupada. I'm assuming it must have happened in Prabhupada's room over here. And they came and asked Srila Prabhupada, because Prabhupada was talking about why he had come to Melbourne, what was his purpose, how he was trying to establish the Krishna consciousness movement. And that time these clergymen asked Srila Prabhupada, they said, what do you think of Jesus Christ? What do you think of the position of Jesus Christ? And that time Srila Prabhupada replied. Prabhupada said that Jesus Christ, we have utmost respect for Jesus Christ because he is the original Guru. So Prabhupada gave the position of Guru to Jesus Christ, and he said, he elaborated on his answer. He said that is because he has come to spread the love of Godhead and to give the message of God to everybody. So that is why we consider him as the Guru. And obviously he was the son of the God, of God. So Prabhupada kept, you know, reiterating that point that Krishna sent his own son to deliver people from the sufferings. And in many, you know, places, Srila Prabhupada actually describes Jesus Christ, the word Christ comes from Krista. And Krista also means all attractive. So he says Krishna actually sent his own son. So the father was Krishna, and Krishna sent his own son, Jesus Christ, to actually preach about the message of Godhead. So Prabhupada had utmost respect. Prabhupada said that it is the same path which Jesus Christ came to preach, which many of the empowered Vaishnavas came to preach, which is love of Godhead. And Prabhupada glorifies Jesus Christ for two qualities. The first quality he glorifies Jesus Christ for is tolerance, which is titiksha. And the second quality which he glorifies Jesus Christ for is his compassion, which is karuna. So he says these are the two qualities which, like, Jesus Christ was an emblem of these two qualities. So when he was actually being crucified, he did not condemn anybody. He was absolutely equipoised. He was not condemning anybody at all. Even though he was on the cross, people were crucifying him. There were nails being driven in his hands and legs and all that. But he was not condemning anybody. He was not blaming anybody. He was not looking down on anybody. But he was just tolerating this suffering which had come to him. So Prabhupada said that he is the emblem of titiksha. He is the emblem of tolerance. And also while he was being crucified, he was continuously praying to the Lord that, oh my Father, please forgive these people because they do not know what they are doing. The people who were actually crucifying him, he was praying for the forgiveness of those people. Because obviously, you can imagine how the Lord will take. He cannot, like, you know, when Lord Nityananda was just, you know, hit on the head by Jagai Madai, how much Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got angry that he actually came down with his Sudarshan Chakra. So he knew his Father will not tolerate all this, so those miscreants will definitely be punished. But he was continuously praying for their deliverance. He was praying that please forgive them, please forgive them. So much compassion in his heart. And Prabhupada said that he came just to take the sufferings of everybody onto himself. But that does not mean, like, you know, that Christians, they go on, you know, there is in Christianity, as we know, there is the confession box where people go and confess their sins once in a week to the priest who's sitting there. So Prabhupada said that, yes, it is good, you know, confession of your sins is, first of all, it's a sign of humility. You are identifying, you are doing introspection and identifying that, yes, I do have these shortcomings or I do have these anarthas. But not that, you know, weekly you go and confess and dump the sins and come and then you again continue the same activity. That is what Prabhupada used to condemn. So he said Jesus Christ came to take on the sins of people. But what, you know, some Christians are thinking is that we keep dumping the sins on them and on him, and we continue doing our sinful activities. So that is something which Srila Prabhupada used to speak strongly about. And the other thing in Christianity which he used to speak strongly about was meat eating. So So Srila Prabhupada said that when the Son of God has come to preach about the pure message of love of the Lord, why are they, you know, harming the same children of Lord? So Prabhupada always used to talk about meat eating when he used to talk about Christianity. That people have, you know, opened up these organized slaughterhouses, you know, they say in the Jesus Christ age, so we can also eat. And there is a whole conversation when Prabhupada was on a walk with one of his disciples. There's a very beautiful conversation where the disciple is telling Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is saying that, you know, some people are claiming like that, but Jesus Christ, according to Prabhupada, was, you know, he never ate meat. Or, you know, in some situation, maybe there was nothing available or something like that. That is that he must have taken. And Prabhupada glorifies Jesus Christ that he actually spent a lot of time in Jagannath Puri. And he was, you know, very attracted and very attached to Lord Jagannath. So this was the position of Jesus Christ according to Srila Prabhupada. He had the highest respect for Jesus Christ because he considered him as the Son of God. He considered him as the Guru because he came to preach the pristine message of love of Krishna. So, and it is a very good coincidence this year that on the day of the appearance of Jesus Christ, it is also the appearance of Gita, Bhagavad Gita. So today is also Gita Jayanti. Like usually we have Gita Jayanti on the day of Moksha the Ekadashi. So today is Ekadashi, but it's not suitable for fasting Ekadashi. So tomorrow we have Moksha the Ekadashi, but today is actually the appearance day of Bhagavad Gita as well. So the Son of God came on this day, and also the sound incarnation of the Lord also was also appeared on this day in the form of Gita. So we'll spend the next few minutes speaking about the Bhagavad Gita. So even the message, the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita was to dissipate darkness and to show the light to people, the correct path to people. I was reading, there is a beautiful book which Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj had released, I think last year or the year before. It's called The Basics of the Bhagavad Gita, like thematic study of Bhagavad Gita and the basics of Bhagavad Gita. And very simple and nicely written book. In that he says that the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to actually show people, you know, souls who are misidentified souls, who are identifying themselves with their body, to show them the correct path and to bring them to the lotus feet of the Lord. That is the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita. And that is why it was spoken by Lord Krishna to not only give us that message, not only give Arjuna the message, but to give us also that message. So although it was spoken 5,000 years ago, Bhagavad Gita is still very famous today. It is still sung all over the world. Lord Krishna's, you know, words are still very famous. In fact, there was a joke someone had shared some time ago on WhatsApp. That there was a boy, this was in London, there was a boy who was asked by his teacher. Like the teacher had asked the whole class that who is the most famous personality in this world. And some people, you know, answered about some, you know, actor, actresses, and some people were answering about their God from whichever religion they had come. So this boy raised his hand and he said, Jesus Christ is the most famous personality. And the teacher was very happy and he said, yes, that's the right answer. And she gave some little award she was giving. So he took that and came back. And then some of his other friends asked, because this boy was a Gujarati, he was an Indian. So some of his friends asked him, he said that you are a Gujarati, how you are saying Jesus Christ is the most famous personality? And he said, no, in my heart I know Lord Krishna is the most famous personality. But because she was giving an award, I had to say that. I wanted that award from him. Gujaratis, no, they will look for deals. So, you know, Lord Krishna's words, which were spoken 5,000 years ago, are still famous today. They are still being sung. And this, you know, Bhagavad Gita has been commented on and read by so many philosophers all over the world, not just in India, but even different parts of the world. Everyone has utmost respect for the words of the Lord. So, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami describes a beautiful quality of Lord Krishna. And he says that whatever Lord Krishna speaks is very sweet. It's very madhur. And, you know, while describing that particular quality of Lord Krishna, in that particular purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about the Kaliya pastime. So after, you know, Krishna chastises Kaliya, he actually, you know, that whole dance happens, everything happens, then Agapatni came and come and pray, and then he forgives Kaliya. And then it's, you know, described that there is a conversation which happens between Krishna and Kaliya. And over there, Prabhupada is quoting that Krishna is speaking very, very sweetly to Kaliya. He's saying that, why do you do all these things? Because you came to this lake and you spread poison and you are troubling all the Vrajvasins, that is why I have to chastise you. Otherwise, I don't want to chastise you. Why I would want to punish you like this? But don't do these activities, no? Then I am forced to punish you just to save my devotees in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada quotes that very sweetly. Even though he has chastised Kaliya so much, he has completely broken his false ego. After that, he is speaking very sweetly to Kaliya. So this is one of Krishna's qualities which is glorified in the nectar of devotion. And because his conversation, his talk is so sweet, that is why Prabhupada says, like in that conversation, in that particular purport, that is why Bhagavad Gita is still so famous all over the world. Because his words are so sweet. And also there was a blessing which Krishna had from his guru, Sandipani Muni, that whatever he speaks will stay ever fresh. It will never become dull. And that is one more reason, you know, obviously, he is the Lord. He need not have that blessing for his words to be ever fresh. But just, you know, to give that glory to his guru, that is also one more reason why Bhagavad Gita is still so famous. And every time we read the Gita, like, you know, even if we've read the Bhagavatam, we've read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but every time we read the Gita, there is always that freshness that we feel when we are reading the Gita. It doesn't appear repetitive. Because it's quite a complex, you know, treatise, and there are so many instructions which the Lord has given very sweetly to Arjuna and still famous throughout the world. So Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita only in 40 minutes when he spoke. He actually sat and spoke. But I know, like now on this Gita Jayanti day, there are so many temples in India and even in Melbourne. I know some devotees have organized the recitation of the whole Bhagavad Gita in Katani Gardens, if I'm not wrong. And even in Vrindavan, where, you know, people like to just discuss Krishna's pastimes and leelas, every Gita Jayanti day, or in most of the temples, they sit down and recite the whole Bhagavad Gita. All the 18 chapters are recited. So for us, it takes some time, but Krishna spoke the entire Bhagavad Gita only in 40 minutes on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So, Madhavacharya and his followers, they are, you know, now how did the Bhagavad Gita come about? So Madhavacharya and his followers actually speak about Arjuna's lamentation. And there Madhavacharya comments that any type of lamentation can never be yoga. It is always roga. Roga means disease. Because even Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, give up your lamentation. Lamentation is not good for a devotee who is practicing Krishna consciousness. So Arjuna's lamentation, however, was not roga or disease. It resulted in the highest yoga, because Arjuna is a pure devotee of the Lord, and he actually, that lamentation he converted into a revelation of his heart in front of the Lord. He went and revealed his heart and he said, Tarpanya dosha pahata svabhava. He said that I am completely confused and I am a soul surrendered unto your lotus feet. You please guide me now. And that is why that lamentation resulted in the spontaneous eruption of the Bhagavad Gita from the mouth of Lord Krishna. Like the Lord had not prepared, okay, now you know this is going to happen, let me sit and prepare. Like, especially devotees like me, I have to prepare so much for my class. But for the Lord, he could speak spontaneously. So it was Arjuna's lamentation which made, you know, this eruption of the Bhagavad Gita was caused by Arjuna's lamentation. And therefore Madhavacharya says that this lamentation of Arjuna was not a roga or a disease. But it was actually the highest yoga, because it resulted in Krishna speaking these beautiful verses of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So he was not prepared to fight. Arjuna was not prepared to fight. But Krishna actually urged him to fight, and you know, he urged him through the instructions in the Bhagavad Gita to do what is right as his duty, as a Kshatriya. So Prabhupada says, like when he was also translating all his books, he said that these are my devotional ecstasies. And the Bhagavad Gita is the ecstasy of Lord Krishna resulting from Arjuna's lamentation and Arjuna's doubt and this thing. And also, you know, we see whenever a spiritual discourse happens, so what setting would we imagine? Like the spiritual discourse happening between Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. That is the setting normally we would imagine, that everyone sitting on the bank of a holy river, or people are sitting in the Himalayas amidst forests and, you know, beautiful trees and nice nature. But here Krishna chose to deliver this message of Bhagavad Gita in the most practical setting, which was a war field. And Krishna did that so that people can relate to this treatise even more. Because when we are living in Kali Yuga, daily it is almost like a war for all of us. Because every day we are fighting against the current of material nature, against everything that Maya keeps throwing at us. So, you know, daily devotees, especially devotees, are fighting this war against Maya. And therefore, you know, Krishna also spoke the Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield in a warlike situation, just to show that this Bhagavad Gita is applicable in any situation. You need not be retired to the banks of a holy river, or you need not be sitting in a forest to sit and listen to the Bhagavad Gita. That was the purpose which Krishna said. And one more thing which is very important to understand about the Bhagavad Gita is that after, you know, obviously Arjuna's lamentation was that I do not want to fight. If I fight, there is going to be destruction, there are going to be deaths. So many families will get destroyed, there will be Varnashankara then that will be born, because women will be unprotected. So that was Arjuna's whole argument with Krishna. And when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, before he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, he did not change. He said, okay Arjuna, you're my devotee and yes, I understand what you're going through. So he did not promise to change Arjuna's situation. He did not change the whole situation and everything became, you know, very nice and hunky-dory. The Kauravas and Pandavas embraced because Krishna, you know, went in the, he's the Paramatma in the Kauravas' hearts also. So he made a change of heart and they came and actually embraced and they said, okay Pandavas, you all take half of the kingdom, we will not fight. No, Krishna did not change the situation of a person. What he did was he changed the mentality of Arjuna or the consciousness of Arjuna. So that is also very important about the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, there was, you know, when we, in this month, obviously we distribute Prabhupada's books and especially the Bhagavad Gita to so many people so that it benefits them. So there was one senior devotee who was talking, who was giving a small class before the book marathon month started. And he was telling these devotees who were going to go out and start distributing books, he said that never claim to anybody whom you are giving the books to, like Bhagavad Gita or any of Srila Prabhupada's books, that these books will mitigate your material miseries. Never claim like that, because sometimes, you know, when you are saying, oh, this will help, you know, it will relieve your suffering or anything like that, never claim that when you are distributing these books. Because Krishna does not do that. He did not do that for Arjuna. He never changed his situation. He did not make the war go away and he did not make the Kauravas and Pandavas embrace and everything was okay. He did not do that. What he did was he changed the consciousness of Arjuna so that he could then face whatever was coming his way. And that is what this devotee was explaining to the younger devotees who were going to go out and start distributing books. Say that, you know, this will give you the, you know, correct way of looking at your problems and it will help you have more tolerance of the problem. Because the problems are not going to go away in this material world. In fact, Krishna himself is saying, what to talk about problems going away. He is claiming the opposite in the Bhagavad Gita. He is saying this is dukhalayam ashashvatam. So he is actually saying problems will keep coming to you. He is not promising problems will go away. But what he is promising or what he is teaching through the example of Arjuna is how to face these problems in life and how to change our mentality towards these problems. Shiktoshna Sukha Dukhada, that always there will be happiness and distress that will keep coming. But what do you do about these problems and these different situations that keep coming in your life? That is what was Krishna's purpose of seeking the Bhagavad Gita, to change the mentality of Arjuna. Not to change the situation of Arjuna, which, you know, he had landed in. So many so-called yogis and sadhus actually claim that, oh, you know, Tathastu, like Passport Baba, you know, there are different types of Babas in India. There is that Passport Baba who claims that, you know, I will give you, if you do so-and-so, you will get your passport to whichever country you want to travel to. So many false claims are there, you know, different yogis and sadhus. But that is something which Srila Prabhupada never claimed, and that is something because his Bhagavad Gita is as it is, because that is something which Krishna has never claimed in his Gita. Also, you know, when we talk about miseries, obviously, Dukhalayam Ashashvatam, there are so many miseries in this world. There is a very famous quote by Socrates, who was, you know, a prominent philosopher. And he's saying that if you get everyone, because there is no one whom you will find in this world who doesn't have misery. Obviously, Krishna is claiming it's Dukhalayam Ashashvatam. So he's saying if you get everyone together and we invest their miseries in the stock market, and you know the miseries are going to multiply or whatever, but we invest some, you know, all the people's miseries who are saying, oh, I am more miserable than others. Everybody thinks their misery is the most is the most prominent or is the most, they are the most dukhi atma in this world. Everybody feels like that, whoever is going through miseries. So Socrates is saying, if you invest everyone's miseries in this, in a stock market, and then you want to give them back the miseries, he said that everyone will choose only their misery. They will not want others' miseries. Even though they feel they are the most miserable, they will still want their misery only. Because that time the realization comes that yes, every soul is suffering in this particular world. I don't want the miseries of others. I am happy with my own misery. I can at least handle them. In fact, you know, there was in India, like in Mumbai especially, there was a huge preaching program that had happened. And there was a senior sannyasi who was actually giving, who had been invited to talk, and there were so many personalities, like illuminated, prominent personalities from Bollywood who had come, like famous actors, actresses, and also industrialists and everyone who had come. And the senior sannyasi had been called to give a class. And another devotee was asking, you know, and devotee said that when these sannyasis go and give classes in all these, to all these prominent personalities, you know, doesn't it cross, like, because Maya is so strong, doesn't it cross their mind that, oh my god, these are all such rich people, they have so much wealth. Because they would all come in their swan cars and, you know, sannyasi would go in their normal, simple orange robes. So doesn't it ever, you know, cross their mind or create that particular feeling in their heart that, oh, look at these people. You know, that little bit of yearning, like, I wish I had this type of wealth or this type of fame and anything like that. And, you know, the devotee was explaining, he said that, because, you know, these sannyasis, you know, this, he was talking about this particular senior sannyasi, he said that the heart has to be full of compassion, otherwise it will get attracted to whatever outside glittery that you can see. But because there is full compassion in the heart, that every person in this material world is suffering. No matter what, you know, external they might be having, beautiful cars, you know, big houses, so much of riches, and, you know, coming in these swan cars and showing, as you know, their fame and everything, but every damn person is suffering in this world, and that is very deeply embedded in, you know, these sannyasis who are preaching, and therefore it doesn't create that attraction because they know everybody is suffering in this material world, and out of that compassion they go there to actually save them from that suffering. Like Srila Prabhupada also said, he would always be questioned, why have you come to the Western world? And Srila Prabhupada said that, especially in London, he would say that, you know, y'all came because Britishers were ruling over India for such a long time. He said that y'all came and took so much away from India, but y'all forgot to take one important thing, which is, you know, the spiritual culture of India, and that is what now I have come to give y'all. That y'all left behind in India and y'all went away, but y'all plundered all the wealth and also y'all took away many things, but the most important thing y'all left behind and went away. So that is the compassion which, you know, these devotees or these empowered representatives of the Lord have, because of which, instead of, you know, getting very enamored by the Western culture, Prabhupada was there in that Western culture, first time he travelled in a plane, first time he was seeing so much opulence, because he came from a simple Bengali family, and in Vrindavan he was living as a mendicant in Radha Damodar temple. And, you know, suddenly these beautiful rooms that his devotees were creating for him and all, but never did Prabhupada for a moment get enamored by all these things. Because there was deep compassion that everybody in this world is suffering, no matter outside they might be today famous, very rich and all that. And my purpose is to give them this Krishna consciousness and save the suffering of these people. So there was once a scholar who asked Srila Prabhupada, that, you know, after Arjuna heard, like obviously he was lamenting in the beginning that, you know, there will be Varnashankara, families will be destroyed and all that, and Krishna spoke the whole Bhagavad Gita to him on the battlefield. But after that we see when Arjuna's son died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was lamenting like an ordinary father, he was crying and shedding tears for his son. So the scholar was telling Srila Prabhupada, he was saying that the whole, you know, pura waste ho gaya, he said, no, like that. He was saying that Krishna spoke for such a long time to Arjuna and full waste. He was telling, don't lament, tolerate, Shitoshna Sukha Dukhada, there will be, you know, these happiness and distress, but just go through them, do your duty. And now we are seeing Arjuna is lamenting. So then Srila Prabhupada gave a very beautiful reply to this scholar. Srila Prabhupada told him that it is natural for a devotee to have affection for others. And when it's natural to have affection for others, obviously they will have affection for their own son as well. So that is a Vaishnava quality. It's not that we become artificially, you know, our heart becomes hard, and then even if our near and dear ones have died, we have no emotions.
He said, no, Vaishnavas are naturally emotional, they are naturally affectionate, so they will have this affection for in their heart, and which obviously Arjuna as a father was displaying for his son. But he said, what is more important is that Arjuna did not give up his duty after that. He did not give up his duty in Krishna consciousness. Krishna had told him that your duty is to fight and your duty is to become an instrument in me establishing dharma in this world by you being an instrument and getting rid of all these miscreants on the Kaurava side, the adharmic beings who are there. So that duty Arjuna did not give up. He kept going on with his service. Even though he lamented, he cried for his son's death, but he still continued with his service in Krishna consciousness. He did not give up that service. And if you compare that with Dronacharya, you know, again Prabhupada was talking about that. He said, if you see Dronacharya, when he was given those false news, we know how Krishna created the whole situation, when he told Yudhishthira Maharaj to say that lie, that Ashwatthama, the elephant has died, and he blew that conch shell when the elephant god was being saved. So Dronacharya, even though he knew his son is Chiranjeevi, Ashwatthama had the blessing. There are few people who have this blessing who are Chiranjeevi, who will never die. And Dronacharya was aware of that. He knew his son is Chiranjeevi, but even though when he heard Yudhishthira Maharaj saying that Ashwatthama has died, he immediately gave up all his weapons and everything and he decided not to fight. And that is how, you know, Arjuna was then able to kill Dronacharya. So that is the comparison which is given, that Arjuna also lamented for his son who had died, but he did not give up his service to Krishna. And his duty was at that moment was to fight. However, we see Dronacharya on the other hand, he was not fighting on the side of dharma. He was fighting on the side of adharma, and he was only fighting with on the side of Kauravas because Ashwatthama was Duryodhana's friend. And because he was not, his consciousness was not rightly placed, he immediately gave up. As soon as he heard about his son's death, he started lamenting and he immediately gave up his duty of fighting. And he put down all his weapons. So that is so you know, Krishna's words have not gone wasted on Arjuna. Even though when he lamented for his son, he still kept on doing his duty. So that is what Srila Prabhupada explains to the scholar. So Giriraj Maharaj says, he says that spiritual life is very difficult. We, you know, Prabhupada never claimed. He said it's simple, but it is difficult to follow. Like it's not complicated. It's a simple philosophy, but it is difficult to follow. You know, becoming renounced, giving up sense enjoyment, progressing on the path of Krishna consciousness. But Giriraj Maharaj was saying that although spiritual life is difficult, material life is impossible. So therefore, you know, choose the difficult path rather than the impossible path. And we see that all around us. How material life is impossible, especially 2020 has shown that. It has opened our eyes to, you know, how material life is completely impossible. Like, so many adidaivik miseries in this particular year. It started with all the bushfires and then this whole COVID-19, the whole year has, like people are waiting for it to get over and 2021 to start. So, you know, this COVID-19 and not only at the world level but even at individual levels, we see everyone is disturbed. There is so much depression, like COVID and this isolation, lockdown, it has brought so many other problems. Like in my own office, I know in my team, there are so many people who have gone under depression and all that because they've been in lockdown, living alone. They don't live in their families, no social structure to support them. And because of that, you know, people take to alcohol and all. And, you know, we see, like, we had office parties, Christmas parties which happened, end of the year parties. And because the lockdown was over, the teams were meeting in some restaurants and all that. And later on I heard stories of my own office parties that had happened. Some people had got so drunk that they misbehaved in those office parties. And now, you know, the matter has gone to HR. Because they misbehaved in these office parties, they were drunk. They, you know, there was physical abuse or, you know, some words and all that which was spoken which were not taken rightly by employees. And some other employees have gone who were lesser drunk. Went to HR and they have complained and now these, you know, employees have been called and they are leaders. Some of them are team leaders and managers. But this is what, you know, we see in the material world, it's impossible. Like, not only collective problems, but these individual level problems as well. Now, obviously, HR is going to question them. There will be a documentation that will be done or a warning which will be given. Because office parties, even though it was a party, it is still considered workplace bullying if somebody does anything under the influence of alcohol. So, you know, all these problems are there in the... So, Giriraj Maharaj is saying material world is impossible. So even though spiritual life is difficult, Giriraj Maharaj was encouraging in that talk that still go through that difficulty, otherwise you will be in this material world forever and forever, which is very hard and very impossible to live in. So where Krishna is so merciful, however, that he looks at every little service that we do. Like spiritual life is difficult, but Krishna looks at every little service that we do with a magnifying glass. He is so merciful. The verse Satram Pushpam Phalam Toyam itself shows how much Krishna's heart is dripping of mercy, so full of compassion. He is not asking big things from his devotees. He is saying one simple leaf, water, flower, that is enough for y'all to satisfy me. That is enough for me. So he looks at every little service that we do with a magnifying glass. In fact, there's a very nice example I was hearing in a class where, you know, that one devotee who was a young brahmachari during Radha Damodar Party days. You know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to lead the Radha Damodar Party and they used to travel from different cities, travel to different cities in America doing book distribution. And they used to have these beautiful Radha Damodar deities in the bus where they used to travel. So there is a nice explanation that person was giving in the class. He was saying, why were those deities called Radha Damodar? He said, because, you know, it was a traveling Sankirtan party and the deities were always in the bus traveling with them. And obviously, because of the motion of the bus, the deities can fall down. So they had kept the deities tied on the altar which had been created over there. They had kept, like how for Julan Yatra we tie Krishna, Bhakti Mantra who ties Krishna before he places the little altar in the Jula. So like that, the deities are always kept tied on their altar so that, you know, they don't fall down by mistake because of the motion of the bus. And therefore they named him Radha Damodar because he was tied around his waist. So this devotee, he was a young brahmachari during that time and he was describing that every day in this Radha Damodar bus Sankirtan party, they would do aarti to the deity. So they would open the doors of the bus and they would do aarti such that, you know, people in the neighborhood could also see. So the pujari was doing the aarti and one little boy, he was 3 or 4 years old. This little boy had come to see the aarti. And he saw the pujari first offered incense, then he offered lamb, the whole aarti ceremony he saw. And he saw the pujari offer the flowers and then he placed those flowers at the lotus feet of Radha Damodar. So this little boy, he saw all this, he was very intrigued because he was seeing, you know, such a fantastic thing for the first time in his life. So what he did, he was just living nearby and he was eating. In one hand he had a hamburger or something in his hand he had and he was eating. And he ran back to his house and maybe he had a garden. So he collected some flowers from that garden. He ran back to the bus and one hand he is eating and with the left hand he threw those flowers and they landed at Radha Damodar's feet. And this brahmachari, young brahmachari who was narrating this, he still remembered this whole incident even after 20 or 30 years. He said, that is still vivid in my mind how Krishna engaged this little child in his service. In one hand there might be meat, but with the other hand he offered flowers to Radha Damodar. So how much spiritual progress, or you know, how agyata sukriti he has got, this little child, how he will progress in future in Krishna consciousness. So if we see, if you know, a devotee can remember so vividly a little devotional service which was done by a child, how much Krishna looks at the devotional service that all of us do. He looks at it with a our faults he tries to ignore, but our devotional service he looks with a magnifying glass. And therefore we see the whole example of Putana. So how Putana had actually come to poison Lord Krishna, but just because she was feeding him milk from her breast, Krishna ignored the poison part, but he took that motherly part that, oh, this lady has come to give me milk. And he gave her the position, he gave her the position of dhatri, or nurse in the spiritual world. So that is how merciful Krishna is. And that is the mercy which Krishna shows to us in the Bhagavad Gita through the Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam verse, that just offer me some simple things and I'll be very satisfied with those things that you offer. So, and then we see, you know, as the Bhagavad Gita further progresses, Krishna is talking about different levels. You know, and especially 12th chapter, 8, 9, 10th and 11th verse, Krishna is talking like, first, you know, offer everything to me. If you can't do that, then, you know, offer the results of your work like that. Or if you can't do that, just offer money which you are earning, use it in my service. So, like that, different levels Krishna is talking about. And he's saying that any level that you are at, I will accept you. I will accept whatever you do. I'm not stressing that you should be at the highest level. Even at that particular level, I will accept whatever you are offering to me. But Prabhupada gives the assurance that even, you know, a person, you need not go through these levels. One can directly go to the highest level of Krishna consciousness and take to the pure devotional path straight away. You need not that first I have to give money, then I should do this. No, you can directly take to the path of Krishna consciousness. That's what Prabhupada assures us in those purports. So, you know, in terms of, you know, giving this money, there was once a man who was very charitable. He would give money, so much money in charities to different organizations. And as his business would improve, he would give more charities. So everybody knew him, very benevolent man. These organizations would look forward to actually receiving this charity every year from this man. So one day this man and his servant, they were going on a boat. Somewhere they were going on a joyride or whatever. And the boat capsized because there was a little bit of storm. And they had to swim. And they had to swim to a nearby island. And that island was completely uninhabited. There was no one living over there. But this man was peaceful. He was not the master, the charitable person. He was completely peaceful. He was not disturbed at all. But the servant was quite disturbed. So the servant was saying, well, how come you are sitting so aram safe without any distress or anything like that? How come you are not getting, you are not in anxiety? And that man started talking about all the charities he had given. And the servant said, how does that matter? We are right now stuck on this island. There is no one who is there over here to rescue us. I can't see any boat in sight. And you are talking about the charities you've given. And then this man said, he said that because I've given all these charities and I give it at a particular time of the year, that time of the year has come now. So all these organizations will come looking for me. So wherever I am, they will find me. Don't worry. That is why you sit peacefully. Even though we are in this island, they will somehow find us. So that is, you know, the assurance. So when, you know, we are giving to Krishna, this man, even, you know, the giving to an organization and how the organization will remember and come seeking to him. In the same way, Krishna is saying that when you are giving to me, how will the Lord forget what we have given to him? So that is the example this speaker was talking about. So just to conclude, we see in the Bhagavad Gita, so many times Krishna keeps talking about, like he talks about, we see his merciful nature, but we also see that he keeps talking about Aham Sarvasya Prabhu, I am, you know, this, I am the letter or Om, I am the Margashish Mark, like he's talking about all his opulences and how he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he should be worshipped continuously. So there was a Vedic scholar who was getting quite disturbed by this aspect of Krishna. So he actually came and he was talking to Srila Prabhupada. And he said that how is Krishna like, you know, such an arrogant God? That he's claiming, I am the Supreme Lord, I am this, I am that, all worship should be offered to me, everyone should come and surrender unto me. Isn't that arrogance on Krishna's part? So, you know, there were some nice examples which were then given by the speaker. He said that there was once a person who was a very big businessman. He had a nice big business, but his hobby was gardening. So whenever he would come home in the evening, he would start gardening. He would like get actually on his hands and knees and he would like to scoop out the soil and plant new trees, take out the weeds, all that. So he was fond of gardening. In fact, Prabhupada says one of the leisure activities for Vaishnavas, an acceptable leisure activity, is gardening. Like Vaishnavas should engage in gardening. So this man, this businessman was gardening, and that time one, you know, a person came from some institution to collect some donation. And he saw this gardener and this man, and obviously there was soil on his clothes, and his clothes were completely muddy, he was wearing those gloves and looking like a gardener only at that point in time. So this man asked him, this person who had come to collect charity, he said that, where is your boss? Can you please call him? So this person asked, he said, why, what do you want? He said that, no, you call your boss because I want to seek some donation. I have come from an organization and we are looking for some charity from him. So then this guy, you know, person had to say, because otherwise it will keep going on and on. He had to say that I am the owner, I am the boss of this house, you tell me what has to be done. Now when, you know, that person declared, because the man who had come to seek charity, he was thinking he's a gardener. So when this person declared like that, should we call him as arrogant? That is what the speaker was explaining. So he said that when there is an emergency, you have to declare about your position, that who you are or what you are, that has to be declared. Like similarly, there was a dean of a famous medical college in India and a very unassuming person, very simple clothes. No one would come to know that he is the dean, like the head of such an important college. So everybody knew he is the Deen, but he would not claim, because you know, even through his demeanor or through his clothes, nothing, he was a very unassuming man. So one day there was a new lift man who had come. And this lift man was, you know, trying, he said that, hey, stop, stop, you can't come inside this lift. So he said that, why? He said, no, 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 this is meant only for, you know, the staff to travel. Who are you? And then the Deen had to show his identity card, and he said, I am the Deen of this college. And the, obviously the staff were all thinking, what is this lift man doing? But the lift man was obviously doing his duty. He did not know who he is. And the Deen, although he was so unassuming, just for that instance he had to declare that, look, I am the Deen of this college, allow me to travel by this lift. So Prabhupada, you know, was explaining through these examples that this was an emergency where Krishna was preaching to Arjuna. He had to actually stress to him that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that his instruction should be followed, otherwise Arjuna's confusion would not have been dispelled at that point in time. So it is not Krishna's arrogance. Otherwise, Krishna does not like to claim that he is the Supreme Lord, and that aspect of Krishna we see in the Bhagavatam. He is playing with his cowherd friends. Somehow, sometimes his cowherd friends are able to defeat him and tell him, Krishna, I am more powerful than you. He is playing with the gopis who actually make him, the elderly gopis make Krishna dance. They actually clap and play some musical instruments and they tell Krishna, if you dance, I will give you a laddu. And Krishna actually dances to the tunes of these gopis. So he does not like to claim he is the Supreme Lord. But because in the Bhagavad Gita it was an emergency, therefore he actually claims that, yes, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender unto me. And when he is doing all this, actually it is described in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary to the Bhagavad Gita. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur actually challenges over there and he says that, Krishna, how can I trust you? You are from Mathura and the people of Mathura are normally liars. So how can I trust you? That is what, you know, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, Arjuna is asking Krishna. That you are a liar from Mathura. You have lied on so many occasions and now how can I trust you, whatever you have spoken up to now? So then Krishna tells Arjuna, he says that, no, 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 I am not a liar. This time I am definitely not lying and I will give you the most confidential knowledge. And this, you know, already we are in the 18th chapter. He is saying, I will give you the most confidential knowledge which will assure you that I am not lying and which will give you the path to come to me. And then he says the verse which he has already mentioned in the 9th chapter, which is Manmana Bhava Marbhakto Maryajinam Namaskuru, that offer everything to me, your obeisance unto me, your homage to me, and that way you will come to me. And the next verse he says, Sarva Dharman Paritrajya, that give up all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. That is the only one true religion of this world. So that way Krishna assures him. So just to conclude, the message of the Gita is very purifying, like we've seen. Krishna came not to change the situation of Arjuna, but to change his mentality and consciousness he came. And the message of Gita is purifying not only for Arjuna, but even for to this day and age, it is purifying for all of us. And some do not like to believe in the conclusion, because the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is actually telling Arjuna that you should fight. So he gives all these instructions, but despite that, he is very, very detached. He is not forcing Arjuna to do everything. And then he gives the choice that, now I have said everything, now you decide what you want to do, Arjuna. And then Arjuna makes the decision that, yes, after getting illuminated from you, I am going to take up fighting. So we see the conclusion of the Gita is actually to make, you know, Arjuna fight. And therefore many people do not believe that, how can a Lord engage someone in fighting and mass killing of so many people. So we see there are many people therefore who become, and therefore it is so important to hear from the mouth of a pure devotee, the Bhagavad Gita, from mouths of pure devotees like Srila Prabhupada especially. Otherwise it is very hard. People who are not hearing from the proper source will actually become atheists on reading the Bhagavad Gita. It will have an opposite effect on them. And we know that has happened. Many people say that, how can someone say you have to fight? How can someone, you know, propagate the mass killing of so many people? And therefore they say it was all mythology. There was no battlefield, there was nothing like that. It was all just a mythology. It was all an illusion. Krishna spoke the Gita, but that battlefield and all that was an illusion. Or there was a communist who had written a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, and that communist was saying that Krishna is the best capitalist of this world. He is gathering so many people on his side. He wants all his people to conquer the world and rule the world. So he is the best capitalist. So we see everybody gives their own concocted version, and people can actually become atheists if you don't read it from the right source. So reading from the right source is very important, otherwise it can have a counter effect, this whole message of Gita. Especially we see when Srila Prabhupada came to this world, it created a revolution. His Bhagavad Gita created a revolution. So by the mercy of devotees, it has reached so many people. It has been written in so many languages. It's also been written in the Braille language for blind people to read. So we have, you know, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, by the mercy of devotees who are distributing, has reached to millions of people. And it has really changed their lives, because it is the pristine message coming from a pure devotee's mouth. Not only the message, but even the touch of Bhagavad Gita is purifying. And there is a small example I will give. Like, there were some devotees who were distributing books in Poland. Obviously, in the winter of Poland, it was so cold. In December, it's so cold in Poland. And there was a man who just parked his car, a very elderly person. And this devotee went, like, as soon as the man was getting out of the car, he went to him and he started distributing some books to him. And he first gave him some small books of Srila Prabhupada. So the man bought those books and he was quite appreciative, like he was having a nice conversation with the devotee, and then the devotee gave him the Bhagavad Gita and he said, you should take this book, this is a timeless classic, it was spoken 5000 years ago, one of the oldest philosophies of the world, it has changed so many people's lives. Like, obviously the devotee was talking about the glories of Bhagavad Gita, and he gave the Bhagavad Gita in the hand of that elderly man. And the elderly man was really appreciating that picture which is there on the cover of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna and Arjuna are sitting on the chariot. So he was really appreciating that picture and he was talking to this devotee. And suddenly that elderly man's face started going black and blue. And he was, you know, gasping for breath, and this devotee could see that, you know, something's happening, and slowly he started losing consciousness. So there are many people who gathered around, and this devotee also quickly called the ambulance to help this person. And they were trying to revive, like doing some CPR and all that, and trying to revive this person. And all the time this elderly man was holding that Bhagavad Gita in his hand, and he was gazing at that picture of Krishna and Arjuna on the cover. And you know, this devotee was taking this opportunity to also talk to others about the non-permanence of the material body, how death can come anytime. So he was talking about all these things, and people were appreciating that message while they were waiting for the ambulance to arrive. And you know, by the time the ambulance arrived, this devotee saw that while clutching the Bhagavad Gita in his hand and gazing at the picture of Krishna, this old man left his body. So it was so purifying that, you know, just antakale chamayam, like at the end of his life, he was looking at Krishna and he was appreciating Krishna, and that consciousness he left his body. So this is the purifying effect of, you know, Bhagavad Gita. Not only hearing the message, but even the touch of Bhagavad Gita is so purifying. So we'll end the class here. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening so patiently. Are there any questions, comments? I know we've gone over time, but one quick question.
Why did we celebrate the Ajanta today? I thought the Ajanta Kurukshetra had already ended, like a few weeks ago.
Sorry?
The Ajanta Kurukshetra had already ended a few weeks ago.
So Bhagavad Gita was spoken at the beginning, Prabhuji.
Yeah, I know, but I thought, like, on the calendar it says, like, that the battle is already over.
Is it? Not yet. Does it say on the calendar? Do we write about Battle of Kurukshetra?
I thought so. Because I think the calendar says that there was an eclipse.
Yeah.
Then Jayaprabhu came. I think he mentioned that on the calendar. Then also said when Yudhisthira Maharaj or Bhishma, when they spoke for 50 days, and I thought that there was at the end of Kargil. So then I was wondering why we celebrated the Ajanta.
I'm not sure, probably I'll have to do some research, but I know, like, Bhagavad Gita is on the day of Moksha, the Ekadashi, which is, like, technically the Ekadashi got separated, but today was the day when Bhagavad Gita was spoken, so it was actually at the beginning. And I think Bhishma Dev was anyway waiting for Uttarayana, for the sun to enter the northern hemisphere, and then he leaves his body, which happens after 14th or 15th of Jan. Uttarayanam always happens around 14th or 15th of Jan, when the sun enters the northern hemisphere, and then he leaves his body, because he had that Ichhamrit, you know, so he was waiting for an auspicious time to leave his body. So Bhagavad Gita, like, the war ended, like, obviously 17 days the war went on after Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and then Bhishma Dev still waited till Uttarayanam happened. So I don't know where. Are you talking
about? I would ask me that question, so I couldn't answer that. I was put it forward to you.
Okay. No, definitely Bhishma Dev left his body during Uttarayana. Anybody has any illumination on this? Yes, Prabhuji.
That's a good question. Thank you for the wonderful class. As you said, this material world is the dukkha, so everyone has to go through suffering. And you also mentioned that spiritual life may be difficult, but material life is impossible. So, as a practicing devotee, difficulties will come in the life because that's the nature of this material world. In that situation, how a devotee can increase the faith in Krishna's protection and increase surrender to Krishna?
You are a nice devotee, you already know the answer, but I will just share my realizations on this. So, today when I was entering the temple, and you know, there was such nice kirtan going on in the temple, because it was, I think, Christmas and Gita Jayanti, there was beautiful kirtan that was happening. And at that time I was thinking that it is so nice to be in the association of devotees, because, you know, as grahastha especially, when we are in our own houses and we are with our family, where, you know, our guard is down, obviously there's no one looking at us or judging us, actually it's very easy to let our guards down and fall into the entrapment of sense gratification. It's very easy to do that when we are in our own house. So when we keep ourselves so much in the association of devotees as much as possible, like I know COVID lockdown wasn't allowing us, but as much as possible we keep ourselves in the association of devotees, that will help, that will keep motivating us and help driving us in, to keep going. So even though there might be problems, or problems in the form of our own, you know, misgivings or our own lack of determination, like especially speaking of myself, that, you know, we keep succumbing to any maya, like any sense gratification which maya throws at us. But if we are continuously keeping ourselves in the association of serious devotees, that will definitely help us, because we learn from each other. So Prabhupada and, you know, many senior devotees explain that, let's say for example, I might be good at doing seva, but my sadhana might not be very good. Then I seek out devotees association who are very good in sadhana, for example. Or somebody might be very good in sadhana, but they are not able to do, you know, much seva, let's say. Or for example, their sadachar, they lack in their sadachar on dealings with devotees, conflicts with devotees and all. Then you seek out devotees who are extremely good in their sadachar, for example, or they are very good in seva. And that is how, you know, that dadati prati kranati guhyam akhyati prachati, you give and take, you learn from each other. Now in terms of material problems which keep coming, you know, I also find a lot of inspiration when I read books. Like, I don't know if you've read a book by Giriraj Maharaj called Many Moons. For example, like, this is just one example I'm giving, where we have examples of devotees, like Prabhupada's disciples who left their bodies. But there's, you know, a short description of their life story is given, and what problems they all went through before they left their body, but still they kept their, you know, they kept their faith in Krishna's protection. Like many went through cancer, you know, one Mataji, Ladini Mataji in South Africa, she was shot dead by devotees. So they, some of these devotees have gone through much more problems than what we would even, you know, imagine in our life. Like Bhakti Tirth Maharaj, for example, you know. So some of Prabhupada's disciples have gone through a lot more suffering. Or, you know, persecution, like, you know, not only the at the time of death, but even persecution, like Bhakti Tirth Maharaj. He was trying to preach behind the Iron Curtain in Russia and all those European countries, and where, how he was trying to escape, or even Salted Bread Book, for example, like, you know, where the devotees were arrested just for printing and distributing the Bhagavad Gita. So when I, personally for me, that really works, like reading about the lives of all these devotees who are going through much more problems than I would have gone through, but still they are keeping firmly, they are keeping their faith in Krishna consciousness and in the protection of the Lord, and keeping on going with their devotional service. So I personally feel that helps me in my life, like, you know, keeping in association through books, or keeping in association with devotees who've gone through these problems and having conversations with them. That keeps us going, and that shows us practically that yes, Krishna is protecting these devotees. So Krishna never claims that he will protect us, or sometimes, you know, when our somebody near and dear one in our life is suffering and we pray, Krishna never claims that he will take that suffering away, or that person might actually leave their body. But Krishna is always saying, I will protect your spiritual realization, I will protect your Krishna consciousness. So that is what, you know, I get inspiration from when I read these books or I associate with these devotees. Thank you. Thank you.